at the bridge is on this side of the border.
Give me some of that.
Won't y'all come on over here with us? Want to walk the water?
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, you know, the Ukraine situation is still there. There's a lot more conversations happening about it as the ramp up for, you know, this offensive that they were going to attempt to do against Russia. And I was reading this article in Today's Hill, and it really made me stop and wonder just what's going on in people's minds. This article, and it talks about Russia is nearly down to its nukes, that Russia is experiencing just all sorts of troubles. And so it's getting closer and closer to being defeated. And so, you know, they've always got the ace in the hole, the nuclear weapons. And I just think to even have, you know, a conversation like that is so alarming to me, Sandy. Am I just some guy who doesn't get it, who doesn't understand that to even be having conversations about Russia being down to its only to his nukes is all the reason more that I think everything should be pushed towards trying to end this.
Well, you know, I think U.S. policy has been to avoid that circumstance. We've not given weapons to Ukraine that would allow them to provide for offensives into Russia, at least very deep into Russia, just on the boundary. And we don't want Russia to get, you know, like I've said on earlier shows, nuclear bombs are like Billy the Kid's gun. It's the great equalizer. And if you corner someone who's got to resort to their six gun in order to save themselves, they will. And so, you know, we don't want to push Russia into that kind of a corner, because if it becomes existential to Russia, then we might expect that they could use their nuclear weapons, which would be a nightmare. So, yeah, talking about it is idiotic, and talking about it as if Russia's down to nothing more than its nukes is also kind of idiotic. We had talks about Bakhmut like a month ago. Yes. How Ukraine was on the verge of winning the Battle of Bakhmut, and no sooner did we get the words out of our mouth than that weekend Bakhmut fell to Russia and to the Wagner Group, based on what was going on that was contrary to essentially the news media's coverage, not the facts.
Sandy, is it safe to say if I'm Russia and you keep hearing all of this about what Ukraine has been able to do to the Russian army, is it far-fetched for Russia to say, we're at war with NATO? Because the conversation keeps saying that Ukraine has done all these great things to withstand Russia, but behind Ukraine is NATO. Am I making that up?
Well, you're not making it up, and Putin's been talking like that. I mean, that's been Russia's party line from the beginning, which is that essentially Ukraine is being treated by NATO as a de facto member of NATO. And while there aren't troops on the ground, as there would be if Ukraine was a part of NATO and was abiding by the defense, the total NATO commitment of full involvement. But yes, clearly Ukraine's capacity to be in this war and to continue in this war is because of what's being supplied to them by NATO. The war would have been over very quickly without NATO jumping to the defense.
So we constantly keep hearing about, you know, the great warriors in Ukraine and celebratory that they've done these great things, and everybody's amazed, but Russia is not unmindful. And to me, Sandy, that's all the more reason that we should all be concerned and worried, because the more we talk about the great warriors of Ukraine and what they've been able to do to Russia, and Russia already knows why this is happening, it lends more credence to pushing them and their backs against the wall, where at some point in time, as you stated, they're not going to have any other choice.
Well, everyone understands that the war has to end with some kind of an armistice that is based on a negotiation. And so then the question is, how do the negotiations begin? Clearly, Ukraine has the posture, the public posture, of saying they need to reclaim everything that was annexed by Russia since prior to 2014, which means the Crimea and also Donetsk and Luhansk, the Donbas region. And so that's not going to happen, you know, particularly the Crimea. And our Secretary of State Blinken has said on occasion we don't expect that to happen. It's not going to happen. And so, but then the question is, are we forced as the allies of Ukraine to abide by exactly their statements about what conditions they would negotiate with Russia? And they basically said they won't negotiate with Russia as long as there are Russian troops in Ukraine. So now Macron and the French leader has called for a world meeting to try and get world leaders from many different countries. And I think he's invited everyone. I don't think Russia's going to attend, but China might attend. Many of the other countries are going to attend to try and develop a unified proposal to present to the combatants as a potential peace proposal. China might or might not attend, but China's also playing an active role in that regard. So, you know, there are pathways towards a negotiation. And then the question is just, you know, how do we back channel this so that we aren't forced to support Ukraine in what is probably an unreasonable position it's taking about how to settle a war?
You know, Sandy, even the most loyal of Russian propagandists are at this point bewildered by the self-defeating military strategy and lack of resolve by the Kremlin to go all in. There are people in Russia who are saying that Vladimir Putin should step it up even more and even engage, you know, more killing of civilians in Ukraine. They've called upon Russian citizens to recognize there's a war going on, move to a war footing, and recognize we're fighting against NATO. He then called for more airstrikes on Ukrainian cities. They're asking Vladimir Putin, who still, Sandy, is, whether people want to believe it or not, still not attacking and causing even more civilian deaths than he really could. He's, and I don't want this to go or sound wrong, as if I'm supporting Vladimir Putin and what the Russians are doing, but make no mistake about it, they still are in a position that they could kill a lot more civilians than they are. And so right now, Vladimir Putin is being pushed to step up the bombardment of citizens. And so at some point in time, Sandy, you know, his back is going to be against the wall, and he's going to have to do one of two things. And one of those things is full attack on Ukraine, and not be more concerned about saving the lives of many citizens. You know, everything that I look at there, I'm minimizing, and one death is too many. But when you're in that kind of a war, there can be a lot of citizens who can lose their lives, Sandy. And the numbers really don't equate to the amount of bombardment and how long this war has been going on, Sandy. It could be a lot bloodier. Am I right?
Well, yeah, I do think that the evidence is, based on the numbers, that Russia has to date used restraint in the way that it has attacked particularly civilian. You know, there are examples of what the United States, if we were in the Russian position, would describe as collateral damage, right? When we did this kind of thing in Iraq or Afghanistan, hospitals got hit and we said, well, that was the collateral damage. It was the errors of war. The fog of war causes these things to happen. And the fog of war is causing them to happen in Ukraine. But I do believe that the strategy of Russia going in was not to create such an antipathy between the Ukrainian people and the Russians that they could not sustain a positive relationship after the conflict. And so I think that they exercised restraint. I think that strategy is sort of going out the window. Now the question is, how far are the Russians willing to pull out the stops in order to carry out, you know, the shock and awe type war that we conducted in Iraq would have killed many, many civilians had Russia decided to use the shock and awe technique when they attacked Ukraine. And so I think part of this also is Putin is reluctant to get into the scale of land war that could end this war rather quickly, possibly for him, because of the scale of the call up to military duty that he would have to exercise on the Russian public. And you know, when he called up 300,000 people, more than 300,000 young Russians left Russia in order to avoid being called up. So there's the potential for creating resistance to this war in Russia by pulling out all the stops. And I think he's been careful about that.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Now that you've seen the magic that this magic wand possesses, let us all confess that we have seen what we do not believe in.
What you gonna do now, and do good?
Oh, but tell me about Eve. Who Eve? Sheila.
She got dropped off. At the break.
It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Doug from Milwaukee. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Sandy, I was wondering about when you're talking about it would be idiotic for the nuclear option to assume that Russia was going to have to assume a nuclear position. Would you also say, if you were to believe that, you would be a schmuck?
Okay. This is obviously a regular listener. Actually, this is one of my sons. He hasn't fooled me. I really doubt that Russia can be backed into using a nuclear option other than one that would be a strategic battlefield type nuclear option. But the fact is that our policies have been pretty goofy, and we've sort of created an environment that is now playing out, and it's a very difficult one. And we've rallied the West together, but clearly the West has a desire to bring this thing to a halt. And at some point, reason will prevail, right? The how do you bring it to a halt? There will be a reasonable path towards that, and it will not involve Ukraine recovering all of its territory.
So hang on, Doug. And so China, the Ukrainian envoy, urges governments of NATO to stop sending weapons to the battlefield and to start negotiating peace. And so, Doug, what are your thoughts, man, about the fact that, you know, they're asking for, you know, for us to start looking at peace as opposed to continuing to support this?
Boy, I just really wanted to call my dad a schmuck in echoing CJ. I hadn't actually formulated any thoughts about it. It's complicated. I've been listening to the shows every week for quite a while now, and I have definitely don't have anything to add that my dad hasn't said. He's much better informed. I do think the only thing I strongly agree with is that it's really not our business. The world policing, like you guys say pretty frequently, it's kind of an absurd hubris that we think is our, not just our duty, but our right. And it's pretty absurd and causes lots of problems. I think more problems than it solves.
Hey, listen, man, I disagree with you calling your dad a schmuck.
Well, no, actually, I looked up the etymology of it just because that whole interaction was so funny. And I was going to read it, but actually I can't. It's Yiddish, though. I wonder if CJ knows that.
Probably not.
But the actual etymology, I won't say. Anyway, good show. Love you. Bye.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, I'm glad you clarified it right away that was your kin. I don't know, man. Did we lose Sandy?
It's actually not Sandy's fault, though. I got to come in and fix your computer. It will be one sec.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, so hang in there, Sandy. We'll be right there. I'll tell you, we're at this point where whether you support China or not, China's Ukrainian envoy and China is moving forward with trying to bring this thing to a conclusion, and it has to come to a conclusion. And you know, there's not much more to be gained by this to continue to move forward the way it is, because it only bad can come of it. Nothing positive is going to come out of it. As if there ever was something positive about it. Just at a point where other things are more important. Let's do this. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
But it only goes so far, 'cause the law don't change another's mind when all it sees at the hiring time.
join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, they got this debt ceiling bill on the table in the nick of time. Did you ever think there was a possibility that it wouldn't happen?
No, I didn't. I think this is political theater. I think it's irresponsible. You notice that in the vote, some of the irresponsible ones were allowed themselves the, you know, it's kind of a irresponsible and a demonstration of a lack of commitment to the public good. When you can vote no, because it doesn't matter. So, you know, several of the people voted no, but plenty of people voted yes to get it all passed. You know, the compromise was one that could have been, you know, they could work out these kind of compromises without a hammer
right
over their head, you know, and that's what they should be doing. But they shouldn't be doing it this way. You know, it's altogether probable that because they played brinksmanship again, that the financial rating agencies will come and re-examine the U.S. financial rating and downgrade it again. They downgraded it several years ago when they
okay, so Sandy, we're having an issue with you on technical side again. So while we're repairing that, I just want to say our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, you want to try it again? Okay, all right. He's got to reconnect with us. But what is really taking place with all of this, and all of us should be alarmed, is that when the House presented the bill, almost 100 Democrats voted, or 50 some odd number of Democrats voted yes to the House bill, and they voted with Republicans. So if we can get that to happen, in that case, Sandy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So, Sandy, explain to me how these two sides that basically are enemies of one another, sworn enemies of one another, that when it came down to the vote from the House, excuse me, over 50 Democrats voted with the House. I mean, that's kind of like unheard of. They voted.
The bill was a compromise. The White House had worked out the compromise. So the 50 Democratic votes for voting with the president, essentially, and the Republican House, because the Senate had to vote for the same piece of legislation right for it to pass. So the Senate, also the Democrats, the Democratic Senate voted aye as well for it. But it's just because this is so fundamentally important. It's political theater. And so, yep, the cavalry came at the end, the bugles played, and they rode in and saved the day.
You know, Sandy, it is political theater because it's every year we're dealing with the same thing. Oh, the sky is going to fall. And we're taking it to the 12th hour. And look, this is going to happen and all of this. And as you stated, both sides know this can never happen. It can never be allowed to happen. But we're here every year.
Well, the problem is that the financial community can look at the House, for instance. They can look at Marjorie Taylor Greene, and they can say, how many Marjorie Taylor Greens could there be in Congress such that this actually would happen? Because I have little doubt that she would be willing to let it happen, because she doesn't, she's dim, you know, her thought processes are dim and very ideological and don't comprehend the broad important things. And so I think the problem we have is that the more mavericks we have like that in Congress, the more it is that the financial community looks at this and says, you know, someday they might get this political theater wrong. You know, the cavalry won't make it.
Yeah. So, you know, so let me ask you, does it, because, you know, the question is who won, Joe Biden or Mike McCarthy? Not Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy was the Green Bay Packer coach. He's the Dallas Cowboy coach. But, you know, but Kevin McCarthy. And that's not the way to look at this, is it, Sandy? It's not a matter of who won.
Well, not really, although that's what politics is all about, right? So I think, and I think the problem for the strident, polarized politics is that when you have bipartisan action, the public tends to give credit to both sides, which is fine, right? Unless you're involved in a deadlock that's a zero-sum game and any credit that goes to the other side is bad for you. And so we've gotten into this bad atmosphere where the bipartisan conduct of Congress, while the public congratulates them, it worries the parties.
Let me ask you, Joe Biden's been around a long time politically. We know, we've seen him, we know who he is. And even in the face of all the negative things they say about Joe Biden knows politics, right? He knows that well. And even at
his, well, I think he does. You know, the art of the deal.
Yeah, and even at his advanced age, he kind of knows how this stuff works.
Well, yeah, except that, you know, the art of the deal involves compromises in the back room, and it probably involves feather bedding special interests, you know.
Right.
Lyndon Johnson was very good at the deal, and a number of other politicians. I don't think it necessarily means that the public's interest wins in every way. I think what happens is they compromise the public interest with the private interest, and they get things accomplished. And so Biden's able to do that. But I, you know, as I said, it's like the guy that's really good at doing deals and buying companies, but maybe he's able to buy a lot of companies because he pays too much. And so, it's easy to buy companies for too much. It's harder to buy companies for the right dollar amount. And so I'm happy that this happened. I think that Joe Biden is very good at the art of the deal in Washington. I am suspicious about deals that get cut in Washington because so much of it is behind the scenes. You know, the reasons that these people voted the way they did might have little to do with the actual piece of legislation and lots to do with other favors and other things that were traded.
So it's what's in the sausage in the end. You know, Sandy, you just know that all the things that the people are arguing about that they didn't want, a lot of that ended up in this deal, right?
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, the very things they were arguing about publicly, that's some stuff that went on behind the scenes that made this work.
Well, and you look at, and so, you know, what did Biden agree to? Some of it was just a window dressing that the Republicans ideologically wanted to claim. You know, it's the couch potato, the new couch potato theory the Republicans have. It's the what used to be called welfare queens. Now they call them couch potatoes, and they're going to get after them. And one of the ways they're getting after them is with this food stamp, this food support issue, which is hard to understand because I don't quite understand the whole food support program.
Right.
But now it's become a program apparently aimed at the working poor. I don't know what happens to the people who are desperately poor and aren't able to work. I'm not sure what programs we have addressed to them. Those are the people who end up on the street. But this program is now aimed at working poor and people who are working half time. So they, you know, they and 80 hours a month, you know, for in lots of jobs in America, we're restricting hours to 35 or 34
Yeah, yeah, we got that problem again, Sandy. We're going to have you reconnect again. But I'll say this, you know, we are just at a point where I don't know if we can really continue in this country to trust either side of this political football, because I you know, I get it. Democrats had to give in. Republicans had to give in to a degree, and the part of this is, I just cannot accept the fact that you want to punish the poorest of the people. I don't know what you get out of that. I don't know if you get to stand up before the people that support you and say, "Look at what we did. We crushed these poor people." The fact that they rolled back 21.4 billion dollars from the 80 billion that the Democrats wanted to spend in hiring people to you know, catch slough offs, people who have not been paying their fair share of taxes. I don't know what point you prove by cutting that by $21.4 billion. You know, I just think it is absolutely asinine that talking about our debt that we owe, and then you turn around and you cut the debt collectors, makes no sense at all to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. Sandy, I think you're back.
Well, maybe.
But Sandy, here's what I was talking about. So part of this deal, Sandy, is Republicans cut $21.4 billion from the $80 billion that the Internal Revenue Service was going to get in order to be able to hire more people to go after the slough-offs. And so the Republicans have done a good job of cutting back $21.4 billion. Can you help me understand how people who are arguing, Sandy, about the deficit think it's a good idea to cut $21.4 billion away from the people who are going to be going after the people who owe the government money? Can you help me understand that?
Well, this is sponsored by the Party of Fiscal Responsibility. Clearly, it's people don't like being audited, particularly people who owe lots of money in taxes. You know, they made the theoretical argument that the vast numbers of people who get audited would be middle income people who own LLCs. But I always thought that was what the word we use is disingenuous, because right. What they're really worried about is the big audits, right? The people that make a lot of money that get audited. And those are the ones that take lots of resources and lots of manpower for the IRS. And so those are the ones that are going to be curtailed as well. So, yeah, I don't understand why it is the American public gives the Washington and the Republican Party a free pass on this label of fiscal responsibility when they do so many things that don't smell like fiscal responsibility at all.
No, Sandy, I mean, just the fact that these people and their jobs and what they were going to do is to collect resources that are owed to the government to address the deficit, and you respond to that by cutting the agency. It just makes no sense to me. We've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. My co-host Sandy Williams is with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I tried to understand what really was going on with the SNAP benefits as well. Excuse me. And so what Republicans got was the deal forces additional work requirements on adults ages 50 to 54, work requirements who don't have children living with them, an extension from existing requirements for the 18 to 49 age bracket. It imposes other new restrictions on the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. More than 280,000 people are at risk of losing aid as a result, according to the Congressional Budget Office. So, Sandy, to say that 280,000 people, we're going to cut their food stamp benefits. I don't know what purpose, what impact. That doesn't have any impact whatsoever, Sandy, on the deficit. What do you get out of that?
Well, it's clearly just political eyewash. You know, it's the couch potato issue, which it resonates with a conservative audience that we're going to make these freeloaders work now before they can get food. But I think it shows a total disconnect between the reality of who it is that are receiving food support, what it means to them, and what it means to withdraw the food support, because it certainly isn't a budgetary item. In fact, the budget analysis that I read said that over the decade, this change might actually increase the amount of cost for the program, because of the change in eligibility would actually, in the long run, increase the amount of food taken under the program. So it's not a fiscal matter. It's purely, this is again political theater, and it's theater about this kind of made up issue of the couch potato, the people who are the takers. I was listening to your show a couple of days ago. A woman called in, and she was alarmed by the fact that, and it is alarming, that 57% of Americans don't pay taxes now. I think they pay FICA if they work, but they might not pay income taxes. And so, unfortunately, the reason it's alarming is not the reason she found alarming. She thought that this meant that there are a whole bunch of people in this country taking advantage of the country. But really what it means is there's a whole bunch of people in this country not earning enough money so that they have to pay income taxes. You know, there are the income tax code involves for people who don't earn more than, say, $40,000 a year, the standard deductions, the child tax credits, the rest of it, mean that they won't pay income taxes. But it's not because they're not wanting to pay income taxes. It would be withheld from them if they owed it, but they don't owe anything because they don't earn enough money. That's the problem.
Well, you know, Sandy, again, and then you tie that into the fact that they cut $21 billion from the IRS, which could go after people who clearly are not paying their fair share. And yet you're willing to sacrifice these people at the lower strata of it is still, to me, hateful, if nothing else. COVID clawbacks. I think, Sandy, they want to take back $28 billion in COVID relief funds, including money slated for highway infrastructure programs and strengthening the food chain supply. So you want to take money away from something that's going to strengthen the food chain supply, which we all know is needed, is necessary. Again, $28 billion, a drop in the bucket, not going to change anything other than throwing raw meat at your constituents. That's kind of where we are again with that, Sandy. I mean, they say that the protected several programs. This again, the Democrats trying to hold back Republicans, you know, removing these dollars. You know, if we've already allocated $28 billion for a program to deal with, repairing of the roads in this country, just leave it be. It hasn't, you know, we haven't spent the money necessary. We're doing a good job now of repairing roads that many of us know should have been done a long time ago. And now they want to put an end to that. Listen, you know, Sandy, you there?
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
I called in now. I try to just end run this with the rest of this technical stuff.
Yes. But Sandy, so they've clawed back $28 billion. That was helping to strengthen the food supply chain. I mean, that doesn't. Why would you even do that? Again.
Well, I think that, you know, they're looking for. I suppose the easiest money not to spend is the money you haven't spent.
Right.
Yet the and I think there is some view that, for instance, the Highway Infrastructure Act was doing an awful lot of stuff simultaneously, which
right.
might have contributed a bit to the shortage in the labor market for instance, construction workers and cement workers, et cetera. So some of that might be rational to pull it to at least claw it back in the near term. I'm not sure whether you want to eliminate the expenditure in the long term. But, you know, this bill was 99 pages long and nobody knows anything about it. The news media didn't bother to roll up its sleeves and write very much about it. All that we know is, you know, essentially four or five major points that were negotiated. I think the ones that were really reprehensible relate to this whole couch potato red herring that conservatives have decided to play up. You know, the conservatives have made up a series of issues that are clear deflections from things that are truly important to the American scene. And this is one of them.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.